Hi. 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 Hello.
It's ridiculous.
Hello, I'm Danielle Tame, and you are listening to Actors Group Conversations on Craft. Enjoy.
One of the things that we hear in class from Burgess over and over again is that the bad guy has no limits, and that's what makes him or her so much fun to play. I asked Burgess to explain that and elaborate a little bit more. What is it exactly that makes it so much fun? Burgess is an actor and the founder of Actors Group Studio, which is a training ground for film and TV actors in the Southeast. He's been in a myriad of projects from series regular to arthouse independents and pretty much anything in between. So enjoy my conversation with Burgess Jenkins on why playing the bad guy can be so much fun.
So I am going to say what I always say, which is thank you again for, you know, taking time out of your busy day to talk to me.
And I'll say thank you as always for having me, because we always have so much fun.
We do. So I was hoping I had given you that list of topics, and I was hoping that this was the one that you were going to pick. This one, and I think there was the one about the script pushing you around, but I think that, you know, that can be for another one, obviously. But
sure.
I want us to talk about one of the things that you had said in class. The bad guy has no limits, and that's what makes him or her so fun to play. So
yeah.
I wanted you to kind of expand on that and talk more about why that is. It's true. It's true.
Oh, it's so true. It's so true. I say mustache twirling over here.
Is that what's happened over this pandemic as well? You've grown a mustache.
No.
That I would love to see.
Never allow for that.
Oh my gosh, I would love to see that.
Well, you know, it's funny. I actually have had a very full beard before for a variety of, you know, parts, and sometimes just because. And when I decide to shave it off, I always shave it into a terrible mustache.
Then
come over and kiss my wife. And she's like, if you don't get that thing off your face, you will not see me until you do.
Oh my gosh, there's a reason that your wife and I get along, because that is the exact same conversation I have with my husband. And he was doing the Van Dyke thing and then shaved it off and left the mustache. And I was like, oh my God, go away. Go away. Shave.
It's porn star bad.
There are very few people who can pull off the mustache. So if we have
Tom Selleck, that's it. There's one person. There's one person on the planet, Tom Selleck,
that's
and
true.
Nobody else should ever do it.
didn't Clark Gable? He did, is that the one in Gone with the Wind? I'm showing my ignorance.
Yes. I suppose we could throw in Clark.
I think he pretty much could pull it off. But anyway, so bad guys.
Yes, bad guys. So, yeah, you know, it's funny, we were, not you and I, but I was just having this conversation the other day, talking about bad guys and just characters in general, and it was, oddly enough, for another interview for a magazine, and they were asking about, you know, what are your favorite characters to play, what kinds of characters, you know, have you played, and, you know, I've been very fortunate that I've gotten to play just about every type of character you can dream up, or, you know, along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're saying the romantic lead, you know, what's that like, the hero, what's like that like the bad guy? And, you know, I sort of broke it down a little bit. So the romantic lead gets to get kind of caught up in the story, and there's, you know, there's either trying to get the girl or trying to help the girl or trying to let the girl help you, you know, whatever the case may be, that's romantic through line. And it's all about the relationship and how those people find each other and then, of course, make each other better. And that's a really fun story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're playing the hero, there's always a tough decision. You know, there's a very difficult situation that the hero has been placed in, and you have to make tough decisions. And so the conflict orientation of a hero is always fun to play, as well as, you know, being the good guy and standing up for justice or whatever the right thing is. But the bad guy... The bad guy.
It's where you get to play.
What you say is where you can play.
Yeah.
That's right. You have no limits. And most people don't realize that. You don't think about it that way where it pertains to the bad guy. And a lot of actors sometimes make that mistake. Once again, it goes back to the concept of letting the page push you around. We do that with all kinds of characters. But the bad guy is the place where you make the biggest mistakes if you don't do it right, because what you really need to say is, I'm the bad guy. There are no limits. It's Candyland. I can do whatever I want. Because the bad guy, if you're thinking about it right, they're already doing things that are rule-breaking. That's the standard of the bad guy. So if that's the case, what kind of choices do you want to make? Get creative. How does this person approach this? And if you look at, you know, pick a bad guy, pick any bad guy anywhere, and that's been played well, and start looking at the choices that have been made. And the genius just starts to percolate. It just starts to boil over that what they realize is, I can treat anyone any way that I feel. And certainly, you know, in real life, the way that you might behave as the quote-unquote romantic lead, if you're in a relationship, you know, in a romance or whatever, there are things that mirror what you would do in real life in the part that you would play. You're playing the hero. Hopefully you walk around behaving as a reasonable human being and a responsible citizen, and you're basically doing somewhat heroic things by nature in that you're making the right decisions and you're picking the right decision when you've got a difficult conflict in front of you. So again, it relates to real life. Mm-hmm. Bad guy, you don't do that. You might think it. You might want to. You might look at something and go, man, I wish I could just do this. And you see those scenes where, you know, not necessarily the bad guy, but the person who says, that's it, I quit, screw you. They throw stuff across the room and they leave and they flip off the boss or whatever. And you go, gosh, I wish I could do that. I would love to do that. I can't do that. Well, the bad guy can. Right. The bad guy can do anything. And so what I like to talk about in class, when I see students taking on, you know, the villain, is to say, okay, all right. So, and then I'm known to say this next statement frequently, which, you know, you're very familiar with, is, okay, so if you could say or do anything in that moment, what would you say or do? Right. Forget what's on the page. What would you do if you could do anything? And they're like, if I could do anything? Yeah. If you could do anything. Oh, well, I'd do X. Well, why aren't you?
Right.
Because I hadn't thought of it. Exactly. Because you hadn't thought of it. You put the guy in the box. You put the girl in the box. And you leave them there. And that's not where they belong, especially if it's the villain. So, yeah, I guess I would just start the whole thing off. And you can take it wherever you want to go next, but is to look at the character from a wide open lens of, does he or she enjoy the things that they're doing that are nefarious?
Right.
Do they feel justified? And they don't necessarily enjoy it, but they feel like they have to. And is that the reason that they've chosen this path? You know, what is the reason behind it? And as soon as you figure out the reasoning behind the character's motivation for doing whatever thing they're doing, well, then you just open yourself up to the possibilities for yourself that motivate those actions. And you start saying, well, what if I could, if there were no consequences, then what?
Right.
And you just run from there.
Right. And I think one of the, there are a couple of things as you were talking that immediately popped into my brain. And one was, I think it's difficult, not for, you know, but for some actors, it's difficult because we have been so trained either by parents, by societal norms, whatever it is, to behave a certain way. And so it's like, but I'm not that kind of person. I would never do that, you know, which also kind of leads to something else that you said, which is that justification. And that I think as soon as we as actors are able to justify why we would do that, and like you say, have no consequences, then it becomes easier, I think, for us to unlock that, you know, that kind of door into playing the bad guy.
Justification is one of the greatest words in acting. And if, as an actor, you won't embrace the concept of justification at every turn, you're missing out on all the fun.
Right.
Because justifying the intention of what someone is doing for yourself, that unlocks your freedom. That gives you the right, the justification, to go forward with whatever you want to do. Now, you know, people, once again, run into traps, and traps is something we've talked about many, many times in podcasts, and it's going to continue to come up because it should. You know, certainly one of the traps might be that I'm the bad guy who's, well, okay, I've got one that's personal on this one because I've played this part, but you know, I'm playing the bad guy who's the drug dealer who's, you know, selling drugs to the local school. And, you know, that's the character that I'm reading for. And people will say, well, yeah, but that's just like, ugh, that's so slimy. I mean, I just can't wrap my head around that because I would just never do that. And then, you know, you walked right into it. You walked into a huge trap. Well, thank God, no, you'd never do that. Good to know.
thank you, by the way.
it's excellent. You're a good human being. But that's not the point. It's missing, you know, getting around that and saying, okay, well, forget that. What is he doing? What is she after? Their motivation is not to sell drugs. Their motivation might be to make money. It might be to prove themselves. It might be that they've always grown up poor or whatever. And yeah, or they grew up poor and they're trying to do something to, you know, win their parents' approval, and, you know, they're not gonna tell them they're doing drugs or selling drugs, but that they've suddenly got money. And, you know, you can change that to whatever you want. You're missing the point if it's about selling drugs.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, you could take it to as simple as, hey, it's a free country. If people want to do drugs, then they should be able to. And, you know, I would never do drugs, but, you know, the government shouldn't tell people they can't or whatever. If that belief system works for you, wouldn't work for me, but, you know, whatever.
Right.
So, the idea being that you get around it, get around the action of what the person's doing. If you're playing a killer and they're murdering people, clearly you got to change the mindset of that. In fact, one of our students who was shooting a movie in New Mexico about 5 months ago called me from set, and he said, "Man, I got to tell you, I'm shooting the scene tomorrow, and I'm really nervous about it. I'm having trouble with it. You know, he booked this part in this movie where, and it's difficult subject matter. It's about these kids who decide to go take over a school, and they're doing it with automatic weapons and all this stuff. And, you know, obviously it's a mirror on society kind of movie.
Right.
It's not meant to be a sensationalized movie so much as it is, you know, to shine a spotlight on it.
Right.
And so, anyway, but he said, I've got this scene tomorrow, man, where we pull up in a bus and we get out and we just start shooting people. And he's like, I just don't, and my character's enjoying it. He's having fun. And he's kind of not super smart, his character. He's this big, strong guy who's not terribly smart. And of course, the student that I'm referring to is very, very smart.
Yeah.
And he was a little shaken up by it. And I said, okay, man, well, what's the problem? Let's talk about this. And he said, well, I mean, you know, I've grown up seeing the news of this stuff. And, you know, school shootings are so prevalent. And it just makes my skin crawl. I don't know what to do.
Right.
So, well, okay, we need to change the context, don't we? And he said, yeah, that's right. I know. I'm just having trouble getting around it. So we worked on it for a while. And I told him that. I asked him, rather, you ever played paintball?
Right.
Sure. Yeah, I played paintball. Then why don't you go play paintball? Those don't have to be real bullets. You don't have to be killing people. Go play paintball and have a blast doing it.
Right.
That's your mindset. It's the psychology of how you approach it. It's not the action of what's on the page. You're making a movie. It can be whatever you want. Remember that. And he's like, oh, gosh, man, that helps a lot. So let me go dig into that. So we sat and we ran it. We started talking about, all right, what's the setup? Who are the people? Where are you playing? You know, let's get into this. And so he went and played some paintball. And he called me afterwards. He's like, hey, I played paintball today. That's awesome, man. How'd it go? And he went, I won. So,
yeah.
You know, it was – and what it did was it freed his mind to be in the right place for it. And that's the kind of stuff that as actors – we get really, really creative, but we have a tendency to get creative with the content of what's on the page. And as the bad guy, that's the worst.
Right.
It's hard with other things. You can kind of sort of get away with it, not that you ever should, with augmenting the stuff that's on the page and trying to make it your own and just believe it for what it is. But as the bad guy, that's the worst. You're not booking those parts if you've got to do these heavy kinds of scenes where you don't buy the action of the character that's nefarious or bad, and you can't get into it, and all you've done is take it off the page and say, well, maybe that would look like this, or it acts like that. You know what's true? When the bad guy's doing something like that, they're all in it.
Yeah,
they're enjoying it. They like it. And you will never like it. And that's going to read that way. So, unless you've got a very tweaked mindset, you're not going to fit that character. And so you have to give yourself a reason. So you can imagine if you're doing that scene and everybody's watching you enjoying, quote unquote, shooting up the school, which is just, I mean, hard for me to just say out loud, but, and they're watching this character, this nefarious character with a grin on their face, but in your head, you're playing paintball. Well, there you go. So it satisfies the character and it gives you the freedom to explore. So anyway, tough topic to use as an example,
right?
But it certainly illustrates the mindset that you've got to have.
Right. And it's actually, you know, I think it's a good topic too, because I'm sitting here thinking, right, so the kid, you know, the student that you were talking to who booked that role, he had played paintball. So I'm trying for myself to figure out what could I possibly use instead of, you know, because I've never held a gun.
Sure.
Honestly,
if it were me, I mean, not to cut you off here, but if it were me, I would tell you, you need to go hold a gun. If that person...
Well, that's true.
If that person is comfortable with a gun,
yeah,
and they know how to load a magazine and carry rounds, and they're familiar with the weapon, then I would tell you, you need to go to a shooting range and become proficient with a gun. Or at the very least, you need to go to a paintball range
and
become proficient with a weapon that feels, looks, and sounds exactly like a gun that will fire, blanks or paint or whatever.
Right.
So that you're comfortable in that respect. So the first thing I would tell you to do is go do that.
Uh-huh.
And the next thing I would say is, you know, you got to change what the action is.
Right.
Which, you know, we've already discussed that, but if it's not paintball, then it's whatever you need it to be to satisfy what you're doing.
Right.
So,
and I think we've talked about that in the sense that, you know, building that bridge.
Yes.
And figuring out, okay, so, and the further away the character is from you, the more work you have to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was, oddly enough, that was another conversation I was having in an interview yesterday. The interviewer said, so I understand that, you know, you will occasionally go sort of method with your work. What's that like? And of course, you know, this is a different podcast, but, you know, the concept of method and how that gets turned into something that's absolutely not what it really is.
Yeah.
And the answer is, well, you know, if I'm playing a character that's exactly like me, there is no what most people refer to as going method with it.
Right.
It's indulging me as me in that place where the character's 98% what I would do anyway. Well, then there's really not much of me that needs to not be there. But if you're playing somebody who's way over here that's nothing like you, then the idea of saying I'm going to show up every day and just sort of say this stuff or do these things in a way that's way over here different from me, and I'm going to capture all the details and all the parts of me that don't belong are not going to show up. Good luck with that.
Right.
That's not going to happen. You're fooling yourself.
Right.
If you're really going to entrench yourself in a whole human being that is, you know, 180 degrees opposite of you, and you think you're just going to show up every day and snap your fingers on that one and not miss details, you're wrong.
Yeah.
You're really wrong. So not only that, forget just being wrong. What about the fun?
That's
where the fun is anyway.
Right.
Going and diving deep on what makes that person tick and how you find out those details and building your own bridge to live that stuff out.
Right.
Yeah, that's the creative process. So I wouldn't know why anybody would want to do it any other way anyway.
Right.
So.
Right. Right. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, the fun parts, like you say, with the bad guy too, is that I can be manipulative. I get to bring, you know, you get to bring sides of yourself that, you know, you've worked really hard not to.
Yeah.
Not to show. And here you can do it. And I'm going to go back to what you said as far as there are no consequences, you know? So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Reminding yourself that with the bad guy, they don't care.
Right.
Yeah, they don't care, and they don't see things the way you see things. So, you know, you look at like the show Dexter, for instance, which I honestly can't watch. It's just too much for me. I watched a handful of episodes because it's brilliant story writing, and the main character is fantastic. Hall is his last name. I can't remember his first name all of a sudden, but he does an excellent job in that character. So, you know, you watch him and what he's doing, and the way he's going about it, it's with grand interest and justification. You know, he's fascinated,
right,
with the things that are happening. There's certainly some joy he takes in it too. He likes it. It's soul satisfying, but there's this fascination that he has. And so, you know, I'd love to hear what he's using for what fascinates him with the art of killing people and the way that he does it. Because I'm, you know, obviously it has nothing to do with killing people, but you watch and you think, gosh, I mean, he is doing this like a scientist who's fascinated when, you know, he's taking apart a rock and he's looking at the layers of sediment or something. And he's so enjoying it and involved in it and that kind of thing. So parallels are absolutely essential, and they allow us to see, as an audience watching a bad guy work, you know, if you see No Country for Old Men, if you watch Inglourious Basterds and Christoph Waltz, you know, we talked a little bit about that the other day in a Zoom class. The maniacal way in which they're going about things, it's so simple.
Right.
I'm not saying it's not rich and tapestried. It is. It's very complex underneath, but it's so simple in that when they finally land at that space, there's this complete comfort that they've taken in the actions that they have.
Right.
Whereas no normal human being would ever be comfortable in those circumstances. And that's the point.
Right.
The bad guy is perfectly comfortable, not in every case, but just as a generality, with making these terrible decisions, doing these awful things. And if you haven't found the parallel that puts you in that super confident, very comfortable, this is justified and needs to happen kind of thing, I'm doing the right thing. Just like the hero would say, I'm doing the right thing here. The bad guy feels like they're doing the right thing there. And making that distinction is absolutely essential, which is why you prepare towards the opposite, which was a whole other podcast we were talking about.
Right.
You would do that. You would prepare towards the opposite there. You would prepare towards how that is the heroic thing to do. It is the right thing to do, at least in the bad guy's mind. So why wouldn't you see it that way?
Right. Yeah. And the No Country for Old Men, it was a hard movie for me to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Just I don't do well with violence, but he was amazing.
He was terrifying.
He was. And at times it was this, you could see him struggle too, but it was a struggle of, oh, please don't make me do this, because this is what I have to do. And it's like, no, you don't.
and see, he gave himself, he's like, well, even there's even a line in there. He's like, you don't have to do this. And he goes, everybody says that.
Yeah.
Everyone always says that.
Yeah.
Like, they just don't understand.
Yeah.
You don't understand that, yes, I do have to do this.
Yeah.
And everybody else that's normal is going, but you don't. But that's not the way he's chosen to see the world.
Right.
And that's the brilliant part of the way that he played that character.
Yeah.
Was the conviction behind what he had to do and why he had to do it. And the simplicity of it. He didn't make it like this grand conflict.
No.
That it drives me crazy that nobody understands. He went the other way, which is absolutely genius. And just said, why am I the only one who sees this? Why is the rest of the world so confused?
Right.
And his clarity was crystal.
Yeah.
And it was just crystal clear. And most other people playing a part like that would have more conflict at the way they went through it. You see the bad guys struggle with taking someone's life, and they would feel badly when they, you know, killed someone, that especially somebody that was quote-unquote innocent. I think that might be the most terrifying bad guy I can think of. It's just nerve rattling, make the hair on the back of your neck stand. Every time you could feel him coming, it was like the shark from Jaws. He was coming, and it just made you so on edge.
Yeah, and there was a stillness in it as well that was just like,
yeah,
you know. And the same with like you mentioned, the Inglourious Basterds.
I mean, you know, it was, again, that kind of preparing to the opposite, where, which, you know, we'll do another podcast on what we mean by that. But just the way that he was, again, Christoph Waltz was completely justified in the way that he in what he was doing. And then completely confused when it didn't go the way he thought it should at the end. It was like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. He was bewildered, like a child, wouldn't it? Yeah,
it was, you like, know? Wait.
He's like, I don't understand. Wait a minute, what?
Right, we made a deal.
This is how it's supposed to be.
Yeah,
we made a deal. And again, that's just genius choices. Yeah. Another one, if you're a student of the craft out there and you have not seen Schindler's List, first of all, watch Schindler's List because it's an amazing movie. But if you don't have 17 hours to sit down and watch it, or at least not right away. At the very least, you should look up the scene with, it's Ray Fiennes, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and not his brother. Who's plays the bad guy in that. And there is one scene in particular. I mean, he's phenomenal all the way through and just terrifying and awful. But where he has different, he's running the concentration camp and he's overseeing it. He's the colonel there or whatever. And he has various different people in the concentration camp working for him, you know, whether they're serving him tea or cleaning his room. And in this one scene where this boy is supposed to have cleaned his tub and he couldn't get the stains off the side of the tub. And he says, "Did you use the lye the way that I told you?" And the boy says no. And of course, you can see that he is incensed by it. But Schindler had just spoken to Fiennes and says, you know, it's killing is very powerful. But you know what's even more powerful? The power to forgive. That's the most powerful thing you can do. So you see him watching this little boy walk away. You see Fiennes watching him walk away from him. And he makes the cross symbol with his fingers as if he's forgiving him. And he tries that and he breathes it in like he's, you know, like he's God, essentially.
Right.
And you see him sort of try and take that in like it's powerful enough. And then the next thing you hear are a couple of bullet shots. And then you see he shot the boy. He killed him. He couldn't do it.
Right.
And you go back to Fiennes and what's he doing? And this is one of the most like, oh my gosh, just chilling moments. He's stretching with the gun. He has no shirt on. He's got on a pair of, you know, uniform slacks and the suspenders, which are hanging down on either side. And he's got the gun up over his head and he's got his arch back and he's stretching and his morning coffee is there.
Oh my gosh.
And it's just the most disturbing scene. That scene messed with me for days. The way that Spielberg shot it was absolutely brilliant, terrifying, horrible, and sure captured exactly the kind of stuff that was happening there. But the way that Fiennes did that, it was as if he had, you know, awakened in the morning and he'd gone out for his coffee and he had to stretch, but forget the gun and the killing and all that stuff. That was just, he left that part out. It was just like he was enjoying a pretty morning.
Right.
And it was so disturbing.
Right.
So, you know, things like that, it's genius when you look at bad guys like this, because, and like we always say, the crazy person does not think they're crazy.
Right.
And the bad guy does not think they're a bad person.
Right.
They think they're doing the right thing. So I know that we're nailing home this point multiple times from different angles, but it's absolutely essential that if you're playing this character, you realize the perception from the bad guy is never the way that we see it. And you have to make sure that you change your perception to fit the way that the bad guy sees the world.
Yeah.
You know, you have to give yourself a parallel that works for you. Obviously, you can't say that shooting that boy doesn't mean anything, and so therefore it's not going to mean anything to me. You have to change your perception that, you know, what you were doing was target practice or whatever.
Right.
Or like we said, paintball. And I may have shared this story before, but a movie that I was playing the bad guy, and I was that drug dealer. But my character, he's talking to some of the kids in school who are running the drugs for him. And my character had been selling just weed to the school, and he finally decides to up the game and he's going to start pushing meth through the school. And the boys say, you know, look, man, you know, we don't mind a little marijuana or whatever, but you know, we're not meth dealers. And so I make a huge deal of it. And I say, you're criminals and you work for me. You're going to do what I'm telling you to do. Well, while I'm having that conversation with the kids, this young kid by the name of Jimmy, and that's the name of the movie as well, Jimmy, overhears me talking to the boys. Well, I see Jimmy overhearing So I now know I have to do something about it. So I kidnap this, you know, 12-year-old mentally deficient boy, or 14, or however old he's supposed to be, and take him out to the woods, and I'm gonna kill this kid. Yeah. And so that's, I mean, you know, it doesn't get a whole lot more disturbing than that.
Right.
So I'm thinking to myself, how do I do this? How do I do this scene so that my character, first of all, justifies the action of taking this kid, but secondly, kind of enjoys doing what he's doing? Because this, my character was not a powerful person. You know, he's basically trash. And he's been trash most of his life, and he's acted that way, and he's not educated, and he's never had any power. So for him to have a gun and have this person begging for their life made him feel kind of powerful, made him feel good about himself, made him feel strong, like a bully.
Yeah.
And so knowing that, I wanted to enjoy doing what I was doing. But I thought, how am I going to do this? Because it made my skin crawl, the scene. So I just changed the context and I made it very simple. I just decided that for weeks, maybe it was months, my daughter, who at the time was 6, was coming home from school every day in tears. And I don't mean like just a little upset. I mean really shaken, upset, and saying, Daddy, please make it stop. Please fix it. Daddy, please help. And that there's this kid at school who was twice her size and twice her age who was bullying her relentlessly, taking her things, knocking her down, doing all this stuff. And I begged the school, and they were like, there's nothing we can do, and we've tried, and this and that. And I was like, okay, fine. So in a perfect world, in my little no consequences space, I thought, how much fun would it be for me to put this kid in his place and just scare the crap out of him?
Yeah.
You know, obviously, I would never do anything like that. And I certainly wouldn't do it with a gun. But if there's a no consequences world and I can go protect my little girl from this kid who is just torturing her and she's wanting to drop out of school and all this other stuff, which, you know, if you've got a 7-year-old and you've ever seen him say, Daddy, fix it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hey, don't mess with my daughter.
Oh, yeah.
That's game on. So, so for me, I had more fun in that scene watching that kid squirm, and all the, and then the audience is like, this is like, whoa, this guy is dangerous and scary and nuts. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And so that's, you know, it's grabbing that parallel that works for you. What do you do? Because if I had tried the idea of, I'm going to kidnap this kid and I'm going to hold him in a cabin and I'm going to murder him or whatever, the character doesn't get away with it, obviously, but is going to do those things. This scene would have been terrible.
Right.
It would have been terrible. I never would have bought it for a second. And right. It would have just been me trying to execute this idea of this bad guy, and it would have been laughable. Right. So, yeah.
Whew. All good stuff.
Didn't think the bad guy conversation would be this heavy, but I suppose
they are bad guys. So it does, yeah. But it's, you know.
You know, sometimes the bad guy is fun, too. You know, sometimes the bad guy just, you know, is you think about Die Hard and Alan Rickman in that. And, you know, he's phenomenal in that.
I love him.
Don't you? I mean, Alan Rickman's one of the greatest actors of all time. And he's a tragic loss. I hate that he's.
Yes.
But, you know, and again, he made the bad guy fun. I mean, the sheriff of Nottingham and Robin Hood and Die Hard. And,
Snape.
Obviously, Snape. Yeah. He plays the bad guy brilliantly.
Right.
And also, you know, in a way that somehow or another, you don't necessarily root for him. Sometimes you do.
But you
love to watch him.
Right.
You like him. And there's things about him that you really enjoy.
Right.
And so, yeah, he's an excellent study in parallels for the bad guy.
Yeah.
And of course, Snape always had just a touch of tortured soul to him.
Well, I was going to say, for him, for that particular role, you know, you always thought, oh, there is something else going on. There is something else that's driving this.
Yes, absolutely. And that's such a great observation, because if you do look at, you know, Die Hard or the Sheriff of Nottingham in Robin Hood, and you contrast those bad guys to Snape, who, you know, isn't really a bad guy, but you certainly feel like he is. There is that tortured something underneath. There is that something going on, and you just can't put your finger on what it is the whole time.
Right.
And how good is he at that? that you feel it, you wonder, the sign on your face, there's some mystery about him that draws you in and you want to know what's going on,
right.
But you never get to find out, or at least certainly not until much later.
Right. You so, do if you, you know, if you've read the books.
Well, yeah. Yes. But that's the thing.
Right.
And you know if you've read the books, but you don't know until many books end.
Right.
So you keep wondering about right. that. And he does such a good job of making you wonder.
He does.
What? The yeah. whole time. So. Yeah.
He does. Yeah. Whew, all these wonderful, you know, I'm now I'm like, I have to go back and watch all these movies
just to, yeah.
just to go and study the bad guys. But
bad guys are fun.
They are. Yes, they are. There's a sentence. I think that might be a good place to stop. Bad guys are fun.
Thanks for having me as always.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
That's it for today's edition of Actors Group Conversations on Craft. This is your host, Danielle Tame, and I really hope that you enjoyed today's conversation. Feel free to rate the podcast on iTunes. You can leave a review, or you can leave me a comment or a question on the Actors Group Conversations on Craft Facebook page. Until next time.